Lunchtime Live with Andrea Gilligan on News Talk.
Ask me anything. My guest this Friday afternoon is explorer, adventurer and mountaineer Pat Falvey, who's with me in studio. Pat, good afternoon. How are you?
Good afternoon. Great. Fantastic.
Thanks.
And we're getting the right weather. Snow.
Yeah, well, it's certainly your right weather anyway. No doubt about that. A lot of listener questions coming in for you today. They're coming in voice notes on WhatsApp. It's 087 1400 106. You might tell us, how did you get into all of this, first of all?
Well, how I got into it is I tried to take my life through suicide when I was 29. Instead of taking a pill, I went for a walk. Someone came in and asked me, would I go do Carrin Tool? Got to the summit of Carrin Tool. I was so excited because I had been so depressed. It was my Everest at the time. Mm. And I said I was going to climb Mount Everest. It was as simple as that.
That's the goal. That's how you set it.
200 expeditions later,
Are.
I'm still here, you know, in my 60s, like going into the 70s and still doing it. I'm just back from Nepal actually only last week.
Yeah. But you obviously got a huge amount out of this for many different reasons, emotionally and mentally and physically, all elements of it, Pat, then.
Oh, yeah. And it went on to be a phenomenal life I've had. I probably went initially to find myself to Nepal, but what I found out about finding yourself is you must lose yourself first. So I came back a whole new person after going to try to find myself in the Himalayas.
You know, a lot of people, and I know some of the messages that have been coming in from people today, very much around the training elements of, you know, taking part in some of the treks and the hikes and the expeditions that you've done, and how difficult and how hard that is on the body, you know, and enduring that. Do they get tougher over time?
It does, yeah. Like, you know, I mean, I'm getting older, like, but initially, like, I was like a donkey. Do you know what I mean? The training was phenomenal. Like, you know, I used to train about 6-7 hours a day. I used to eat up to 9,600 calories, which is, you know, phenomenal because you usually eat 2, but if you eat it, you have to burn it.
Yeah.
So that was actually a big problem. And I suppose my successes have come because of the teams I work with. It's the people that had my back, my family, you know, the people that were there, like my trainers, the people that pushed me, you know. And yeah, it was hard. And like 50 climbers I've climbed which have actually passed away, you know, that were at that level.
That's very tough, yeah.
So every morning I get up, I'm grateful, like, for still being able to do this. And now it's different. I now actually take people on these expeditions. I train people from all around the world. So I became the apprentice, then I became the master, and
teacher.
Now I'm the mentor and coach.
Here we go. Well, listen, a lot of the messages coming in for you. The WhatsApp number is 087 1400 106 and we've this voice note in from Aisling.
Hi there. I just have a question for Pat. How does he stay motivated while he's walking? Is it that he listens to podcasts? Is it music? Or is he just with his own thoughts?
Well, I'm actually in my own thoughts and I love it. I don't play music. I think I'm stimulated enough while we're actually trekking, because we're trekking in some of the most amazing places on planet Earth. Like when you're doing the likes of Mount Everest, you're in along the Dovhkhozy, you're in a place like that one time was at the bottom of the sea and they're projecting like missiles to the sky. So in reality, I'm in my own thoughts. I never actually need. I've been on 60-day expeditions and I've never played music.
Never, not once.
Not once.
No, just take it all in.
Take it all in.
There you go. Another voice note in, Pat, from Dara.
Have you ever come close to running out of oxygen while on a climb?
Yes, I nearly died actually in 1993, where I was about an hour. I was in the death zone for too long. I had run out of oxygen, or I didn't run out. There was a bit of ice stuck in the top. And I was just 1 hour from the top of after about 50 days. And I was dying and I turned. It was the best thing I ever did. I went back 2 years later and I summited Mount Everest. So it's very important, like, that you actually go with the mountain. Chimalungma, goddess mother of the earth. It's like you get permission to go up. But you have to be very focused and you also have to, you know, get out of it when you need to get out of it.
And so what did they do in that instance when you say, like, you were an hour from the top and you were running low on oxygen?
Well, what happened is I got pulmonary edema. The oxygen stuck. Now, I also actually climbed into the death zone without oxygen on Chao, the 6th highest in the mountain. But like when you're the leader, I was taking the oxygen stuck. I got pulmonary edema, cerebral edema, thrombosis, lost my peripheral vision. 1 hour from the top of the world and I turned. Like, it was only for my team, I wouldn't have got back. There was Ger MacDonald, Pemba Gelgi. And literally, they kept on saying to me, look, you've got to get back your kids. Now that my kids are 46 and 40, like, you know, it was a long time ago. It kept me going to get out of there.
We've another voice note in from Zachary.
Hi, Pat. This might not be the most appropriate question for radio, but how do you go to the toilet when you're halfway up a mountain? Thanks.
Mightn't be the most appropriate, but it's a great question.
Do you know, I get loads of people asking me that.
Yeah.
Basically, what we do is we bring a pee bottle and... So like say when I'm during the night, because you have to pee, it's a natural instinct, but you can't go out. So you take the top off and you actually put your penis into it and you pee. And then you, instead of it being freezing, and I know it might be inappropriate, you put it under your arm so that you keep it warm so that the following morning you can throw it out. Because if you don't, the pee will freeze in the bottle and then you won't be able to get it out and you'll have no pee bottle.
So you're right. And I didn't quite expect that now, but... And what about the women?
The women, what they have sometimes is a shiwi. That's where they put an adapter onto their private part and they go like a man and into the pee bottle.
And you carry it under your arm?
Well, you carry the bottle.
Yeah.
It's not that you carry it like when you're going during the day, but it's just during the night it gets very awkward. Like I have had someone, and I don't know whether it's appropriate. Well, we were in the Antarctic. A guy I know, he took it out, forgot to zip up his pants, and he lost a half an inch off the top.
Seriously?
Yeah, seriously. Yeah, it can be that bad. Like, so the small things become the big things, and someone that I know,
it's to be a fairly big thing, all right. It's
Well, you know, the main thing on expeditions, they talk about the food. And, you know,
going to
the peeing
toilet.
And going to the toilet. It's actually one of the natural things.
Of course
like,
it is, yeah. Everybody has to do it. But
yeah, you can't hold it.
No, we've another voice. Great question, Zachary. We've another one in from Rory.
Hi there. I'd like to know, what do you do when you really need to eat something and what kind of snacks do you bring up with you on the mountain?
Well, on the mountain, we bring dehydrated food. That's on the high mountains because of the fact of the weight, and we keep it light. And then, like, everything has to be boiled. In other words, we have to drink. Hydration is one of the most important things that you have to do. If you don't hydrate, you get pulmonary edema. You'll get high altitude sickness. So between the dehydrated food, which is light, and then we have to bring the gas to heat the water because you don't have water. It's just all snow. So it's very, very important we get the portions right of gas because we don't want to be carrying stuff too heavy.
Yeah, too much extra weight. And when you say, sorry, dehydrated food, like what sort of stuff are you bringing?
Well, it could be, you know, spaghetti bolognese, but it's dry, porridge, dry. And then you just mix water with it. Everything you mix water with, especially when we're above 7,000 metres. And then going into the dead zone into 8,000 metres.
Okay. Loads more voice notes, Pat, coming in, right? But a couple of the WhatsApp texts. Why did you do Everest twice? Was once not enough? Ask this listener.
Well, you're right, actually. Very good question. You know, the first time I did it for me, and I got to the summit, the size of a snooker table, you know, or the size of a kitchen table, 5.5 miles up. And when I was there, I was so excited. No Irish team had ever done it from the south side. And I came up with three objectives. I wanted to do it from the south side myself because I would become first person in the world if it's the case I did that in the Seven Summits twice. And the other one is I wanted to actually help other people. So we put a project together for the first Irish team for me to do both and have the first Irish female to join a team who was Claire O'Leary. Fascinating person, 52 kilos, 5'2". And she was going to do the south side and... So, yeah, it was those driving factors.
The first time was yourself and the second time was kind of assistant. A tour, basically, helping people.
Well, no, it wasn't. No, like Everest, I don't do tours on Everest. They have to be of their own volition. Claire was a woman of her own volition. Like, if you take it, like, lots of people now go and it's a tick list. For the likes of myself, it's because of what it is. The highest mountain in the world, Chomolungma, goddess mother of the earth, and at one time was at the bottom of the sea. I have a fossil at home that came from the death zone. The grace, the power, the actual beauty of actually standing on what was at the top, bottom of the world and top of the world and the nearest place to heaven.
Just another listener wondering about the South Pole and what was that like?
Well, the South Pole was amazing. It took me 60 days to get there, 58 actually. We were eating 9,600 calories a day. There's nothing around you for 2,000 miles. We pulled everything. We did have a drop on the way. And I had a fantastic team. And it's about teamwork. I put my sciatic nerve 38 days in. And it was going to cost £1 million to evacuate, which we didn't have. So we kept going to the pole. And it was absolutely amazing. Mm-hmm. Standing on that point in the centre, I became a time traveller twice on the North and the South Pole. Because when you walk around that point, you walk around all the meridians of planet Earth, the whole 24 hours. So I became a time traveller twice.
Unbelievable. We've another voice note in, Pat, for you from Ellen.
When you're reaching the peak of a mountain and the temperatures are dropping, is there any risk that a bottle of water or any liquids you have could end up freezing solid?
Yeah, you're right. Exactly. It, of course, it could freeze solid, but that's the reason why we have to keep them warm. Because like it will freeze, and if we haven't got the water to drink, we will dehydrate. And once we're on the move, sometimes we keep it close to our body inside our down suit so that it doesn't go below zero. Because, and like if you think of it, it's quite natural. Like if it's a case like mm-hmm. that the cold got into us, like at below 35 degrees, we will get hypothermia, and lots of people die of hypothermia. So we're very, very conscious of our core body temperature. So if our core body temperature is 35, well then if something's close to our body, it's not going to go below zero, and that means it won't melt.
Okay.
But we put it back in very fast.
Yeah,
when you take it out.
I'd say you do. We've this voice note in, Pat, from Rory.
How do you take care of your hands? Like, I presume they're in an absolute state after you go mountain climbing. Like, what protection do you wear on them, and what do you do afterwards when you finish the climb?
Well, I suppose in the places like Everest where it can go down and the North Pole and the South Pole where it goes down to minus 60 degrees Celsius, so cold you could catch a kettle of water, throw it up and it comes down freezing. And again, it comes down to your body core temperature. I've seen people lose fingers and toes for mere seconds of exposure to the extreme cold. So like we do have gear where we're very lucky nowadays. But again, like people, you know, as I say, like will take their extremities out, like with their hands. Or even like, you know, I have some amazing shots, like, you know, if it's a case you take the goggles up, like it freezes like, you know, straight onto the eyelids. So you just have to be covered and you have to have the right gear. Like it's taken years and years. And that's the reason why I train people all around the world. You have to get this right. If you get it wrong, you lose fingers and toes. You may even lose your life. With cerebral edema, pulmonary edema. And this is at the high end now, right? Okay, like I do lots of trips all around the world, Kilimanjaro's, base camps, Machu Picchu's. But the high mountains are dangerous. They're getting safer because there's more people on it. I was there, there was only a few.
Just on that, listeners wondering, please ask Pat, do you think Everest has become completely commercialised and dangerous with the likes of guides bringing lines of people up that just aren't experienced enough?
Yes, it's become commercialised. Like as I say, when I was there initially, I was standing with three people on the summit. And then like we had 15, but out of the 15, like four died. But nowadays, everyone that's doing a challenge, like whether they're, you know, doing marathons or triathlons, it's like a tick list. But remember, there's 7.5 billion people in the world, and Everest is an attraction for a lot of people. That's into challenge. The problem is, it's just one mountain, and there's only about 2 or 3 days they can get to the summit because of the weather windows and the jet stream winds, okay. And it's getting worse.
Angela's wondering, please ask Pat, can a novice do Everest? I've climbed mountains all over Ireland and the UK. I've done Kilimanjaro. There's others I want to do, but I'm wondering, would I have to do other mountains in the Himalayas first before doing, was it Aconcagua?
Aconcagua.
Yeah, that you mentioned.
Well, Aconcagua, like I run training courses all the time, and it's a matter of getting, it's a different mountain altogether once you start getting up there. There's, as she said, Aconcagua, Mount Elbrus. You have the likes of Island Peak and then other mountains. There is a progression. And what I would say is to get a mentor or a coach, because when you get that, at least then you're getting the right information. But I would suggest that you learn the techniques. Whereas I am a guide, but I don't guide. When people sign on to what I'm doing, they're trained. And I would suggest to you that if you're doing it, get trained, because there is a risk you die, on the high mountains. So like just get in contact with me and I'll give you all the information. If you're really serious about wanting to climb Chamalongma, or what we call Mount Everest.
Rose is wondering if, apart from altitude and fitness training, if Mount Everest can be walked up by just following the fixed ropes.
You would be stupid to do that. And okay. We've had instances where people came off the fixed ropes and they didn't train themselves in the fixed ropes. So it's, again, it's about training. And it's not fixed ropes all the way. Mm. So again, it's a matter of speaking to people that are there and then getting the information that you want. And I'd be very serious about it. Like, it's not just like saying, I'm going to walk up Mount Everest. And like, take your family. Like, your family are going to be worried crapless about you when you're doing things like this. Mm-hmm. I remember when Claire was doing it, her father said, Pat, like, you know, will you please look after Claire? But Claire is a woman of her own volition. And she took on the risks and she was trained well. And like, there is people that are go out there and they need a guy to pull them up. And anyone that knows the climb would actually have come across that.
We've another voice note in from Connor.
I'd be wondering with these people now, these thrill seekers, and they're heading off to all corners of the globe to do these amazing things. And it is amazing. But do you know, like, how do they keep their feet on the ground when they come back? That's what I'd like to know. I mean, how do they just adjust back to ordinary life and get back in grounded and actually just enjoy the simple pleasures, and not everything needs to be a thrill, you know?
Yeah, everything isn't a thrill. In actual fact, my greatest what's next is to become the best grandfather that I can be. And in actual fact, it's going to be the hardest thing that I will ever do, because, you know, I've been quite selfish, quite arrogant, you know, quite unfair to those close to me. But it is hard to keep your feet on the ground. So like when you would like say, when I do it, it was what's next, what's next, what's next, what's next. All of a sudden, like, I've been all around the world, 200 expeditions, live with 32 tribes. And, you know, that went on to the polar stuff and still doing now, you know, the likes of Kilimanjaro's with people. So I absolutely have a passion. I love what I do, and I love being where I go.
I have two very final questions for you. One is from Paddy, who's 8 years of age, listening to you today. And he's wondering, what was your first meal when you came down from Mount Everest? And do you like sun holidays? two great questions.
Yeah, it's two great questions. Yeah, I don't like sun holidays. but like, I have been on one or two. I have only been on one or two. My wife used to always say to me, she said, like, let's go to Lanzarote.
Yeah.
In the early days, I never went to Lanzarote. And one of the questions was, I said, I'll go to Lanzarote one of those days.
Yeah. Favourite meal then when you came down?
I think it's when I came down, a pint and a steak in Kate Carney's cottage back where I live in the Gap of Dunloe in Kerry.
And lovely.
Yeah.
And finally, where are you off to next, asks Gerard? The moon, perhaps?
Yeah, well, actually, it's one of my ambitions is to go to space. Myself and James Allen from Australia, we're training in four people. If it's a case, we get to six people. We can't afford to go ourselves, but we might actually be able to go with them if we get them trained. They're billionaires. And, you know, that's actually one of the things, like, one of my legacy is very important to me. I set up this Forever Young Club for 50 to 90 year olds. I'm still doing like about six treks a year, which most people is a bucket list. I'm 67 going on 68, so I'll be 70 in 2 years' time. And I still dream, dare, do and try to achieve and love it.
You're fantastic. And if people want to get in touch with you that have maybe inspired by your years of exploring, where can they do that?
Well, if they get onto www.pafalvi.com, we have lots of stuff, like ordinary stuff that you can do, from Kerry to the Antarctic to the likes of Nepal, South America.
Amazing.
And I just love talking to people. Sign into one of my webinars. Like, we have loads of people that are armchair travellers signing in. They see all these people that are wanting to do things.
Just enjoy it. From the comfort of their home. Nothing wrong with that either. Pat, listen, it's been a real pleasure. Thanks a million.
And thank you too, Andrea. And thanks to all the listeners as well. And thanks for your questions. They're very good.
I know, we actually could keep you for another, I'd say, half an hour easily getting through the rest of them. So we'll have to bring you back another day. Thanks so much for your time on the show. Pat Falvey there, of course, explorer and adventurer, and just a great inspiration for anybody else thinking of doing something similar. But as he says, do it in a safe way.
Lunchtime Live with Andrea Gilligan. Weekdays at midday on News Talk.